Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to this episode of Say Why to Drugs. Before we get onto it, I'd just like to thank everyone who got in touch after the DMT episode. One very important thing, which I think I failed to make explicit during that podcast, is that consuming a drug in a different way will lead to it having quite a different profile. Now, as lots of you have pointed out, DMT is often smoked, as well as being taken orally as a tea. And of course, when you smoke a substance, it takes effect far more quickly than when you swallow it. So for a bit more of a discussion around this, I'd recommend listening to the cocaine episode of Say Why to Drugs. In that, Scroobius Pip and I have a more in-depth discussion about how the way that you consume a drug can impact on its effect that it might have on you. So although the effects of cocaine and DMT are obviously very different, the issues around how you consume it are somewhat similar. Now, onto this episode. Today, Scroobius Pip and I have a discussion about prescription opioid medication. This is quite a short podcast, and we don't discuss all of the short and long-term effects of opioids, because there's a lot of overlap with the episode about heroin. So if you haven't listened to that episode, I'd recommend going and checking that one out as well. During the episode, I talk about various brand names that these prescription opioids can have. Here are just a few of them for various different opioids. Things like OxyContin, Percocet, Paladone, Vicodin, Percodan, Tylox, Demerol, Tramadol. These are the names that you might be familiar with, that are the brand names of the particular opioids that we'll be discussing. And one final thing before the episode starts. At time, I refer to these prescription opioids as painkillers. It's since been pointed out to me that actually the word painkiller isn't necessarily a particularly helpful one, as talking about killing pain might not be a particularly moderate use of language. Now, unfortunately, I didn't have time or I couldn't go back and re-record the episode with Pip, but I just wanted to mention this here, that I'm going to stop referring to them as painkillers from now on. And anyway, without any more waffling on from me, Scroobius Pip and I say why to prescription opioids. Right, let's talk about opiate-based painkillers.
Yes.
Now, I would recommend listeners to go and listen to the episode about heroin first, because a lot of these drugs that we're going to talk about have kind of similar methods of action to dimorphine, which is heroin. But they sort of have a different kind of profile because they tend to be used by different types of people, and they tend to, because they're prescribed medication, they can quite often be, the profile of use is very different quite often.
Of course.
So when we talk about opiate-based painkillers, there's a number of different ones. So fentanyl is one, buprenorphine is one, oxycodone, OxyContin, hydrocodone. There's sort of a variety of them that are on the market, and some people who are sort of using them non-medically are using previously prescribed ones, and there is also a sort of market for illicitly making them, in which case, obviously, once again, they can be kind of cut with other things as well. Mm-hmm. So if you get this kind of illicit stuff, it's you're less likely to know what's in it.
Yeah.
So there's a big dilemma around opiate painkillers, and that is that they're extremely good as painkillers, but they can also be potentially extremely addictive.
Yeah.
So what do you think is the appeal of opiate-based painkillers?
Well, it seems to me to be a necessitated initial appeal and then an addiction. So the people I know who have had problems with these, or the big stories I've heard of this, have all been a professional sportsmen and women who've had situations where either they've had an injury and needed it to get over that and then become addicted, or they've got addicted to stave off injury. Again, in our hugely monetized sports world now, there would be pressure. I had Rob Parker on the podcast, who's a former rugby player, and he spoke about, again, that kind of pressure of, well, I need to play on Saturday, so it is what it is. Mm-hmm. I'll take these, it will get me through that. I'll deal with the actual injury at a later date, and so on and so forth. And then when he wasn't even playing anymore, the addiction was still there. That the fact he'd found something that can essentially numb everything, numb his problems as such, was hugely addictive. So yeah, it feels like it's one that isn't even necessary an initial, oh, I fancy trying that appeal. More, you need it to start with, and then it can the effects of it can be very appealing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think being prescribed it can also lead to this, well, it's a medicine, I'm being prescribed it, therefore,
yeah,
like, I need it, it's good for me, it's safe, and all this kind of thing that can sort of tie into, yeah, that.
And again, on the podcast of my Distraction Pieces podcast with Rob Parker, he spoke about exactly that, of kind of initially needing it and then it being quite an easy one to fake the symptoms that required it to be prescribed almost endlessly. Mm-hmm. He could quite easily go, yeah, no, I need more, or again, trade with people and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And I think this podcast is probably, we're not going to go too much into the effects. I think we covered them quite well in the heroin episode, but just, yeah, to sort of touch on it, it's the sort of the pain relief, kind of euphoria, potentially feeling relaxation. It can also do things like slow your breathing. And then some of the side effects we talked about were things like constipation, nausea, vomiting, dizziness, and loss of appetite, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I listed sort of a number of different types of opioids there, and they, similar to the benzodiazepine episode, different ones have different kind of profiles.
Right.
And so buprenorphine was one that was kind of developed to help people get off heroin, but has also,
right,
kind of become a drug of abuse as well. And fentanyl is a particularly problematic one, certainly in the States and in Canada, I think, because it's 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. So,
oh, wow.
Most of these are either synthetic drugs or semi-synthetic. They're either completely sort of made in a lab, or they're synthesized from a plant, kind of,
right,
thing. So
yeah,
there's sort of they're developed from a pre-existing kind of, like from the poppy quite often.
Yeah, sure.
And oxycodone is one that I think has been associated quite a lot with problems in the States,
yeah,
as well. And it's been interesting watching, trying to develop non-abuse versions of it. So oxycodone and OxyContin are kind of the same thing, but OxyContin has been developed so that it has a slower release. So if you take oxycodone, it takes about 30 to 60 minutes to have a kind of peak effect.
Mm-hmm.
But OxyContin takes about 3 hours.
Right.
So they can kind of be prescribed for different things. So if you've got sort of, you need an immediate painkiller, or you need kind of long lasting sort of numbing pain for kind of longer term.
Yeah.
That they can be used for different things.
I mean, they've made the names confusingly similar.
Yes. Yes, when
I kind of have it as Oxy and Oxy Light, or Oxy Slow, or
yeah.
So genuinely, it's like, yeah, that's easy to confuse a which is which there.
Actually, there are lots of brand names as well, which I haven't got here, but I will,
yeah,
list them in either the intro or the outro, so people, if they've heard of the brands, they can sort of realise
associate which is which,
what,
yeah,
we're talking about here. Quite a lot of these are, yeah, scheduled drugs, so they're tend to be prescribed to treat people with severe pain or manage pain after surgeries, or as you were talking about, this can be a problem with sports people. And one of the things I thought it'd be interesting to talk about is why it might be such a problem in the USA compared to the UK. Mm-hmm. Because that certainly seems to be the case for me anyway. Like you mentioned, the sort of the main people that you've heard who have these problems have been professional sports people. Yeah. And I don't really know any professional sports people, so I haven't really heard of it being a problem over here. But it's interesting to hear that. Whereas in the States, I think it does seem to be much more of a problem. Yeah. And it seems like there's the sort of reason for this is that in the early 1990s in the US, there was kind of a national scandal of under-treatment for chronic pain. And it got a lot of press that there were a lot of people perhaps suffering unnecessarily with chronic pain when there were these amazing opioid painkillers available. And in the press at the time, the sort of potential harms of opioid-based painkillers were kind of downplayed and said, well, these can be managed with supervision from your doctor and that kind of thing. So prescribing of these drugs in the early 2000s really skyrocketed. But then alongside that, people using them kind of off prescription also really went up. And one of the reports that I read said that in 2012 in the US, opioid-based painkillers were the second most common drug of abuse after cannabis.
Wow.
Or sorry, not abuse, but people using for non-medical reasons.
Yeah.
It was the second most common one after cannabis.
That's
whereas amazing. I don't think that's the pattern that you see in this country.
No.
And another paper said that in 2014 in the USA, there were over 10 million people using opioid-based painkillers for sort of non-medicinal reasons.
Yeah.
So I mentioned it quite a lot on this podcast, but I was reading David Nutt's book again, and him talking about, he talks about opioid-based painkillers, and he believes that in the UK we undertreat chronic pain.
Right.
So perhaps there's some sort of happy medium here of like finding a balance between not letting it sort of fall over into the way it has in the States with it being a drug of sort of abuse, also sort of making it available to people who really need it.
Need it, yeah. And again, availability with the correct monitoring and help to come off of things is a great thing. I said the risk, as we've said with many of these, is if there's not that knowledge and that assistance on dosage and on going on and coming off.
Yeah. Yeah, and as we talked about, the withdrawal symptoms can be really unpleasant, sort of severe flu, anxiety, panic attacks, insomnia, muscle weakness, fever, quite sort of unpleasant for 3 or 4 days of real kind of difficulty. And if you can get hold of the medication, sort of, it could be really difficult to find the willpower to come off.
I said, my friend Rob, who I keep mentioning on that podcast, he was told off by his doctor because when he decided he was addicted, he threw them all away and just went cold turkey, which his doctor said, that's not the best option here because you've been on them for so long. It's kind of, and it worked out for him in the end, and for him mentally and personally, it was the only way he felt he would deal with it. But yeah, he was surprised that when he went in, he got a telling off because he was like, right, well,
can you help me come off?
Yeah.
And I think this is, once it's similar to benzodiazepines, that yes, tapering your dose down is the best way to come off almost any medication.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the help and support to do that, then it can be extremely difficult sort of to manage. And we have a massively under-resourced NHS, certainly in this country.
Hugely.
And in the States, there's a different relationship between doctors and the pharmaceutical industry. If you go to the States, you can see drugs being advertised on TV and people go to their doctors saying, I want to be prescribed this particular drug, which is not something that happens in this country.
No.
So I think that could also be related to why people might be perhaps over medicinalized in the States and under medicinalized in this country, potentially.
As soon as marketing campaigns come into it, it's a worrying a situation, really, isn't it? It's like the one that you're most aware of is going to be the one that you think is the solution.
Much harder to keep track of as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Cool. And there we are. Thank you so much for downloading this podcast and listening to it. And of course, do join in the conversation on Twitter or Facebook. This is currently the last podcast I've got recorded, but I'm working on researching some more episodes and hopefully we'll be able to record some more very soon. In the meantime, I'm going to try and get some special bonus episodes up in the next few weeks as well. But for now, thank you so much for all your support for the podcast. Do get in touch with comments, ideas for episodes, anything that you like, and keep watching this space for more news and more episodes. Thank you so much. Bye! You've been listening to Say Why to Drugs with me, Dr. Susie Gage. The music was by Jim Murray and the artwork was by At My Name Is At. Say Why to Drugs would not have been possible without the generous support of I'm a Scientist, Get Me Out of Here, the Medical Research Council and Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.